after battle comes aftermath. Everyone will likely hear about Rook's Rest, or will soon, and we, in turn, will experience a wide variety of responses from them, both personal and political. This may steer certain houses one way or the other, or into greater uncertainty. With Aegon out of action, of particular interest is Aemond, and of course the Green Council, not to mention Rhaenyra, and of course Lord Corlys. A lot of big players have to respond to this big event. Not only will it have a huge impact on King's Landing and Dragonstone, but on the Riverlands, where much of the upcoming action is building. So many of the trailer shots we've seen upcoming feature the Riverlands, and if you know the books at all, you, like us, are expecting quite a bit more to come from the all-time most war-torn region of Westeros. But not just war. Additional plots are brewing. Daemon's uncertain support of Rhaenyra is not a book plot, so theories and guesswork are very appropriate here, not to mention the expansion of Alice Rivers' story, one of the most fun characters in the entire series. So we've got spoilers from the books, we got trailers, we got casting notes, we got interviews, and we got a special guest. But we have no leaks. We never have leaks. All that and more on this episode of History of Westeros Podcast.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Hello and welcome, everybody. Welcome back to another preview episode for House of the Dragon, episode 5. As I said in the intro, no leaks, but all other forms of media are fair game. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Live streams at 6 o'clock on Monday, some Wednesdays at 7, and like this one, Saturdays at 3, all times Eastern. And we're on twitch.tv playing Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire, Dynasty RPGs on Friday at 6 Eastern. Welcome! We've brought a ringer from the ringer, Joanna Robinson. It's welcome back. It's not your first time here, but it's always a special pleasure to have you as a guest.
What a joy. Can I do my best? I just wanted to try this. History of Westeros podcast.
Not long enough. You gotta go way long. You gotta go podcast.
It takes a little work. I couldn't just do that. I had to practice, you know. Well, let me just start by asking, what have you thought of the season so far? Are you enjoying it? Has it been surprising? I mean, highs and lows, what would you have to say, like the basics?
Yeah, I've loved it. I think it's even stronger than it was in season one. Mm. I think we're just like building strength upon strength. I think especially helped by like us not vaulting through time every few episodes, stuff like that. I think that's just letting us lock into the story. I think episode 3 was my favorite, which I think is a little divisive, but episode 3 is my favorite, I think, just because I thought it was just like really funny, really witty, like the language was really elevated. Just like I really, really liked that one. And then episode 4 was amazing, of course. Just like they really crushed it. I think like a lot of book readers, I think some things like Blood and Cheese or the Cargill twins, I had some questions of like, is this landing exactly the way that they wanted it to? But Rook's Rest was just a 10 out of 10 banger success. So yeah. Yeah, I'm really liking this season.
Even George loved episode 4. And it's interesting, episode 3 is the only one we haven't heard his comments on, besides the ones yet to come. But
that's interesting.
I don't know that that's a bad thing. He just didn't have anything to, you know, he's not going to blog about everything. Anyway, we do have a little more to say about George's latest blog post later in the episode, so stay tuned for that. He gave some cool comments about dragons and some other things that are worth mentioning here and in future episodes for other related topics. So if you have any questions for us or Joanna, send them to us now in the stream. And if you're listening to this after the fact, hit us up at westeroshistory@gmail.com or visit us at our website, westeroshistory.com. Okay, a couple of quick super chats here to start off. PetaChick84 says, at least we know the makeup department really knows how to do SFX work, what with practice on Viserys. Glad to catch a full stream. Well, we're glad to have you here as well. Yes. You know, it's funny, when I saw that comment out of the corner of my eye, I thought it said sex work. I was like, do they? Like,
oh. Okay.
But SFX work, yes, Rook's Rest, they did a great job there with those dragons. But of course, this person is referring to what might happen to Aegon, I think. The burns and all that, which we've barely seen to this point. Yeah, you just
potential goopiness. Yeah.
I have a theory that I've put forward on this show, which may or may not come to pass. Let me get your take on this, that Aegon will end up wearing his father's mask and cane.
I love that. I heard you say that because I'm an avid listener of this podcast.
No,
and I heard you say that and I was just like, yes, please let it be so. we recently ordered a few Funko Pops for our set deck for our show, and they got the standard ones. I was like, no, guys, I went and found the Viserys with the gold mask. I was like, I want Funko Pop, guys. So
also shout out to Amanda Molyneux, who sends a super chat but no accompanying questions. So just a thank you. All right. Let's go right to King's Landing. We have a shot that we've been seeing since the preseason trailers of Alicent and Aemond on the walls of the Red Keep. Alicent kind of staring daggers at him in a few of these spots while he is wearing the dagger, which we saw him claim conveniently at the edge of the crater there where Sunfire and Aegon landed. And
do you have any thoughts or feelings about the dagger, its proximity to fire in the last episode, and Aemond's ability to read Valyrian?
We theorized a little bit about it in that it wasn't glowing red hot. So I don't think it was hot enough for him to have read it. I don't know any reason why he would make it get hot. I feel like the opportunity for him to read it has passed.
Gone.
I was hopeful, but I think no.
He's going to have to trip and oops, drop it into an open brazier or something.
Yeah, I love, we joke about how Aemond, studies history and the blade and all these things, but I'm not sure if he actually has studied that much history of Valyria. He obviously knows how to speak the language well, but does he know about the prophecies or anything related to that? Does he know about Daenys the Dreamer? I mean, he's probably heard some things, but yeah, what reason does he have to hold this dagger over the fire? I don't know.
No reason.
Aegon never did, I don't think.
The only thing I would say is that the dagger with Aemond has much more chance of some sort of discovery versus the dagger with Aegon, who was using it as a laser pointer.
Fair point. So. Yes. He used it to point at people and to slam into the table. Yeah, it was more of a gavel than in this case. So we have this other shot of Aemond and Helaena in the throne room, which is pretty interesting. Lots of rumors. This is a good jumping off point for the rumors of Maelor. One rumor says that Maelor will be a child of Helaena and Aemond, which I could sort of see that. That would make sense. It would be maybe a change from the source material that might take some getting used to, but I could kind of see why it would make sense. But that's not the only possibility. The other possibility is that Helaena is already pregnant with Maelor and she just isn't showing yet. And the third option is that there's just no Maelor at all. Where do you fall on these various options and what do you think might be the best one, or what strikes you here as most interesting?
I mean, I think the only reason for Maelor to exist at all is for him to already exist at this moment of succession that they find themselves in. There's an heir in place, and if he's not there yet, then I don't see any reason to. I know that Condal was like, that baby hasn't been born yet, but I don't see any reason to have him, especially since I don't know how long they're stretching the timeline on this war. I know, I'm sure you guys have had the same issues we have when we're like, how are those blonde toddlers of Rhaenyra going to be engaged in the Battle of the Gullet? How is that going to happen? So maybe, if they do the Gullet next season, between season, they'll grow. But I don't know that there's a reason to do Maelor at all. With love and respect to the Helaemon shippers, I love you guys. You're the best. You're maniacs. But this is the only interaction that those two have had this season, right? Isn't that right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's been in the field a lot. Well, not a lot, but somewhat. Yeah, most of the scenes with him have been in his room planning with Cole, or out in the field or in the council chamber. Yeah,
or in the brothel.
Yeah, of course, Helaena's not going to be there. So another rumor flying around, which I think is not a very good rumor, but we'll address it briefly, is that Alicent would be Maelor's mother. That has even less purpose than what you just said. That does nothing for the plot other than create conflict for Alicent only, which I don't even know if that's conflict. Besides that, she's clearly taken Moon Tea, and I don't see, it wouldn't make a difference in the succession. That's why it just Daeron would come ahead of this son, and this would be a bastard child anyway. So it's just, that was probably the product of just the fandom going a little far with this, with some of these rumors, but I'd really, really doubt that.
I think if you latch on, like, as we all do, we pore over these interviews that the creatives give. And when we see Condell say that child has been born yet, I'm pretty sure that's the wording. Then
he
we're all like, oh, yet,
yet I think.
Just
yet. Okay. Right. Right. And that means that that to us at home is like, okay, so then they must be doing it. But I don't like, I feel like sometimes they say things and aren't as particular with their wording as they might be. You know what I mean? And so yeah. I'm just like, I could see them just not doing Mailer at all. I really, because there's nothing else really for Mailer to do. I don't think that there's a reason to do it at this point.
We did take note that Rickard Thorne was cast, and they made him a somewhat significant actor, which is Vincent Regan. Do you remember Vincent Regan from 300 and Troy?
Okay.
So he's Rickard Thorne. That's the one that goes off with Mailor and, you know, gets killed and all. So that's by itself doesn't mean a whole lot, but it's a little pro Mailor point, I guess.
Yeah, I would say I would really wonder how much some of the events can be, you know, extended a little bit. I think a little bit of time extension here and there could go a long way. You know, like there's certain periods where you're like, okay, well, this was a month. This was a month. You know, like I feel that you maybe could make it happen, but it is tight. Like to have someone go from not pregnant or just barely pregnant to having a baby and that baby like going on like it is a tight casting decision, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how much you guys bumped on Allison in episode 4 saying like it's been a few weeks, just a few weeks since my husband died. I was like, what are you doing to me? What are you doing to me with this timeline? Jace's hair is so long. What are you talking about?
Like, well, so, anything is weeks, Joanna, if you want it to be. You just like, it's been 52 weeks since this happened.
You're right.
Yeah, I've been alive for, you know, like, nearly
thousands of weeks,
2,500 weeks or something like that.
Wow.
Anyway, so these are good, very good takes. We'll just have to wait and see on Mailor. I agree that it's very uncertain at this time and how he would play a role if he did. So there's also this separate shot of Aemon looking at the throne. This is kind of classic Game of Thrones, just someone staring at the Iron Throne. Daemon's done it. Littlefinger's done it back in the original show. It's just a scene setter that we're kind of familiar with. I kind of thought this was going to be a dream when we saw it for the first time, because this has also been in the trailers. Aemon staring at the trailer, like, oh, this is related to maybe Aemon at Harrenhal or something.
It's all spooky with the lightning.
Yeah, it has the spooky light, but that was just actual rain. So they tricked us, because before when they had this lighting, it was a dream and there was no lightning.
Right.
So that was pretty clever. So this is actually most likely, though, that scene with Helaena instead. So it's not a dream, probably. And that means it's definitely not at Harrenhal if it's in this next episode. Do we think Aemond will go to Harrenhal this season?
I do. I have a whole theory about how this season ends that I want to float by you.
Let's hit it. This is good time
you
as any.
You want to do it right now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Well, you know, as you mentioned, we're book readers. We know all the, like, what all the little battles are. But we also know that Condell has said, like, we're getting one more big battle this season, right?
Yeah.
And all the forces seem to be gathering in the Riverlands, right? You've got the Greybeards from the north and Jason Lannister's forces from the west. And I don't know if the Hightowers are getting involved, though they have been mentioned. You know, so if we have like a big battle in the Riverlands that actually condenses a few of the smaller battles into like one big, you know, you're like, hey, that person wasn't there, but like they're going to put a bunch of different people there. My only question about that is like, who is a character at that battle, in whatever battle that happens in the Riverlands? Who are the characters there that we would care enough about to be invested? So my further thought was, like, with love and respect to Jason Lannister, we haven't even seen his face. We're staring at his brother all season, but we haven't seen him all season. So, like, who is fighting in the Riverlands that we care about? And so then I thought, well, what if we condense that with Kristen and Aemon going to Harrenhal? I mean, it is all kind of close in the book, but what if we just like make this like there's a big battle and then Kristen and Aemon like focus their attentions on getting Harrenhal? And I really think that the final culmination of the season with the big fucking got you, excuse my language, to Aemon of like he's walking around and Harrenhal is as empty as it was when Daemon showed up earlier this season, and Daemon and Rhaenyra and the rest taking King's Landing is sort of where we're going to end it. So I think he's going to arrive at Harrenhal, may even meet Alys, but like not spend any significant amount of time there yet. That's a season 3 thing.
Kind of where they'll leave it off. Yeah, I like that a lot. And I think, okay, so regular listeners to the show know that I've been pushing the idea of the Battle of the Gullet. I've become disabused of that notion pretty severely because of the evidence or the lack of evidence. There's been not a single darn shred of anything from filming leaks or trailer stuff that shows anything of the sort. So I'm going to go ahead and reverse my call on that and say, yeah, that's probably right. Another thing that got me on that track is re-listening to the trailer, the Weeks Ahead trailer, which has at the end Damon yelling like some general on a battlefield, show there will be no mercy, and this huge roar of like the troops answering him.
Yeah.
So like that has all the feel of a battle, and you're right. You're totally right. It's all, everything's been in the Riverlands. Not a darn thing has been Gullet related. We haven't seen talk about the Triarchy, or maybe they've been mentioned once at most. Yeah, it just isn't there. You're right. So I think this is more likely.
I think other than Jace being like, let me fight.
There is that. Yeah.
but that feels like it'd be set up for, I mean, Gullet feels like an opening season 3 kind of disaster. I feel like this is all speculation. We don't have any leaks. Like, there aren't any concrete leaks about what happens in the back of the season. And they're clearly going someone off book. So I love this idea of Damon rallying the Riverlanders for this fight and then abandoning them to go take King's Landing.
That sounds like Damon.
Doesn't that seem like something he would do? Like,
they're just there to serve him. Yeah.
Because it's, you know, if they combine it into some amalgamated version of the fish feed, that's the bloodiest battle that happens, you know, without a dragon in this whole civil war. And so I like this idea that they like thought they'd have dragons and they didn't, and it's just like what these men do to each other, you know.
That would be an interesting surprise. I wonder if how people would react to that, like a battle without people, I mean without dragons, what is going on,
right?
We were promised only dragon battles. Speaking of uncertainty and dragons, if we're talking about the Greens family situation, talking about Maelor and to a lesser extent, Aemond and Criston Cole, what's our latest prediction on Daron? Do you have any thoughts on him? I mean, is he still going to be Daron the Daring? Because they've obviously changed him a little bit. Like, they could go a lot of directions with this guy, and I would not expect them to stick to the books. Doesn't mean they won't, but it's not necessarily like a safe bet either.
Like, what do you want his personality to be?
Oh, good question. I want him to be different than his brothers. I think, like, if he's just another warlike kid, that's not super interesting. But he shouldn't be, like, just too different. He was raised by the Hightowers. You know, he was raised in Old Town with the same basic family that has the same basic cultural background and attitudes. And
yeah,
this is the same house that's like, you know? Cheer the Conqueror babe. Like, this is who he grew up with, you know.
I picture him like a Jace type.
A what
blonde Jace.
Yeah, I picture him just like Jace, kind of.
Yeah, he could be a
blonde Jace.
I like
Jace to be Jace the Daring. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I see him as a similar type. They're somewhat chivalrous. They're generally decent. You know, a little impatient sometimes.
There's still some swagger there. Like, I really like the way that Harry Collette is playing. Like, when Jace is proud of himself, there's this little, like, self-satisfied smile that he does. You know, like, there's this, like, princeling behavior in him. And all the I keep calling this out because I'm obsessed with it. His like hand on pommel acting does.
We've talked about that. Yes.
He's always ready.
Yeah, which is like so clearly like something he took from Damon. And I love what he's doing with Jace.
Yes.
Yeah, Damon. Again, I know I just said like let's not take what the showrunners say like necessarily literally every single word, but when Condal was like, Dare's not a dragon rider yet, right? Isn't that what he said? Like, he's not yet of a dragon riding age. I was like, what? What do you mean? I have some questions about that. So, you know, as far as we know, he's not been cast. That's like a season 3 thing to anticipate. Unless that's like a super, my galaxy brain is that it's a super under the wraps. They're lying and Daron will like swoop in at whatever the big battle might be. Probably not. But, you know, I was just like, what if?
I'm that would be crazy. Yeah, just the Blue Queen all of a sudden appears. Yeah. It's like, oh my goodness, that would be crazy.
Oh my God, yeah.
You can't have a Blue Queen. You can't have the Blue Queen, though, at a battle in the sky in the lake. You'll run into the problem with Return of the Jedi, where they had to change Luke's lightsaber to green so it wouldn't hide. Yeah. Nah, this is a dark blue. I don't think that's a problem. And
that's
I just wanted to throw in a Star Wars reference.
I loved it. I do think that, I don't know, with Daron, they've mentioned Daron and Tessarion like what 3 times max or something like that. So I think that like for general audiences, they're gonna be like, who the hell is that? So probably they're gonna have to really put on the gas of like mentioning him before he shows up.
Yeah. And of course, this is ties into the Maelor stuff. That's kind of why I wanted to talk about it together, because if we recall from the books, Maelor is killed at Bitterbridge and Daron is unforgiving towards Bitterbridge because of that, even though it wasn't Bitterbridge's fault by it, like even slightly. So that might have to be a change. He might have to destroy Bitterbridge for some other reason, just them not being on his side, maybe. I don't know. They don't have to. It's not hard to come up with a reason. I mean, they are at war. But it's worth pointing out that those things overlap. Okay, so moving on to some of the shots from the trailer, we have this line. Behold the traitor dragon Meili, slain by King. I love this. The traitor dragon? Like, this, you can feel the spin. Like, they're really pushing this.
They're doing their best Otto Hightower impression. They're like, what's the PR spin? How can we use this to our advantage?
Yeah, I like how this is a good example of what happens in Fire and Blood. But, you know, the sources can disagree. Some sources will take this as what happened, you know, and some will be like, they're obviously lying. Can't you see the clear spin being put here? And not necessarily. Some people are writing 100 years later. The spin wouldn't be available for them to analyze necessarily. So I like that. That's kind of one of the fun things I look for in the show is the way they can set up these disputed perspectives that come along later.
Yeah. But I did want to ask you guys, because you are the keepers of the lore and the history, I feel like last season they pretty much got away with this is the official, this is what actually happened, and what you're reading in Fire and Blood is this sort of like conflicted, multiple different sources. But I, you know, and there was a way you could make that work with like Laenor sneaking away rather than dying and all these other changes they made. This season, it feels like they've moved away from, you know, if you're like cutting out kids or combining battles or whatever it is they're doing, like, can we still actually say that this is what actually happen versus Fire and Blood?
I think it's what actually happened in show canon. That's all.
Right,
you know,
which is
mean.
Fine with me.
Yeah.
Which is fine with me.
You're right.
I feel like in season one they were trying to say like all of this can be explained as propaganda, all these changes that we're making, and I don't think they're there anymore. And I don't mind that at all, but I just think it's different from the thing they were saying in season one.
Even in season one, not all of the changes could be explained by propaganda, because some of the changes were obviously just really basic level, like ages of characters and like some really basic, like not propaganda stuff about like Alicent and like that backstory. So I think at its very root, it could never have just been the true telling. As I think after our George interview, I said that it was like it seemed to me that this is, you know, their true telling, not Fire and Blood's true telling. And there is no true telling of Fire and Blood, because George has not decided what the true telling is for many of those things, right? Like, that's the impression that I got, that there are many, many things that there is. You could not say what canon is because he prefers to leave it open.
I totally forgot you got that great answer from George. I retract everything. Everyone who's watching this, if you somehow didn't watch them interview George, please go do that.
Thanks. So I like that. And it, from the way the crowd is reacting in this trailer, it looks like it's going to be similar-ish to the books, which is this does not have the desired effect. Kristen Cole thought to awe them, and it doesn't work. In fact, it causes like almost a riot or panic, and we see shots
thousands
of people at the gates.
King's Landing afterwards.
Yeah, not good. And it's easy to see why. They're like, well, dragons are killing each other. Like, we're caught in the middle. I don't want to be here for that. Like, Rhaenyra is going to come, right? Isn't she? Like, this is just getting started. This can't be the end of it. So, yeah, that's kind of scary. And in the books, Alicent closes the gates to keep people from leaving. So we might see something along those lines. And we do see the gates closed. We don't see that it's Alicent's order, but that doesn't necessarily make a huge difference in terms of what's going to happen.
Are you telling me that Kristen Cole is not the same teenage that Otto Hightower is? Is that what you're trying to figure out?
I think I'm telling you that. I'm going to go out on a limb and say he does not have the political mind of Otto Hightower.
Shock it.
I know, right? Big. I'm really taking a risk with that opinion, I know. So Aegon's in a litter. We have that in the trailer. Alicent asks if he's alive. In the book, he is, but that doesn't necessarily mean he will be in the show, but I expect him to be, because that would be a pretty huge change to have him die. Yeah, that would really change the success and situation and all this other stuff, so I really doubt that.
Unlike Maelor, he's got a lot to do.
Yeah, so. Exactly. They could replace him with Maelor. He'll die, Maelor will appear, and it's...
Right.
No, either way, it's someone who can't make decisions. And then we have this line, the king does not lack for heirs. In the trailer, the subtitles say that's Otto speaking, but that's not Otto's voice. It sounds like Iron Rod.
Yeah, they've been misattributing names all season.
Yeah, that happens occasionally. And Aemon claims a council orb in that same series of shots, which is probably Aegon's orb. You know, it's the one that's would have been there otherwise, and he's reaching into
it is Aegon's orb.
You've confirmed that? Okay. You can tell by looking at it, probably.
Close attention to their orbs, and the fact that Aemon didn't have an orb, and yeah, it's Aegon's.
Ashea is the orb mistress.
Yeah.
Mistress of orbs, that's your title.
Always got her eyes on those guys' orb. Got it.
So there's also this line, so you cast me aside, where Allison is standing up at council. Now, it's not clear whether this line is spoken at the same time as the scene. They do that a lot, where a line is shown to read and it's presented differently. But it sounds like she's dismissed from council, which again, sort of from the books, because Aemond is chosen to be regent in the books, which is quite possibly what's happening here. Is that kind of how you interpret that?
Yeah, but there's not even like a competition in the books, right? It's just like Kristen Cole's like, hey, Aemon, it should be you. And he's like, sure should.
Yeah.
And no one even like considers Allison. But I like that this idea that like, Allison might think it should be her makes me think about like that conversation she had with Rhaenys in episode 9 last season, right, where Rhaenys is like, have you never imagined yourself on the Iron Throne? This idea that like Allison has some ambition in a way that book Allison doesn't, or some idea that, you know, she didn't show Laris her feet for nothing. Like, where's the support?
Where's the payoff for that, right? Yeah. Christy Cole wanted more normal things out of her. Like,
but neither, possibly. I mean, if Aemon's going to be Lord Protector, which he should be, right? Like, then nothing that Allison done. Like, I love this idea because Allison was so complicit with the patriarchy, with all these men, with like shaming Rhaenyra. The scene that I always think about is her like talking about Rhaenyra lactating at the council table, right? It's such like a fucking gender betrayal move from Allison. So this idea that she has like done all this stuff to ally herself with the patriarchy, and then she's like, oh, but I didn't think it would apply to me.
How could this happen?
Like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's similar to Otto. Like, she's having the same. It's similar to, it might even play out like that. Like, her dismissal might feel a little bit like Otto's, like, she's just, like, mad at everybody. And then she's like, yeah, but this is partly on you. You kind of kicked all this in motion. And, yeah. So, and there's this seems to be another angle to this, because some of this dialogue, or at least related dialogue, seems to happen outside at the gates. It looks like Kristen maybe is getting ready to leave again. And he says, what we must do now is terrible. Will you preside over it? I'm not even sure those lines are in that order, but it seems related.
Right.
And he seems genuinely like traumatized and just like despondent. Like, this is, it's some of, you know, he's been a background character more, and partly because like he's really important, but he hasn't been able to show a big range as an actor because his character is required to behave in a very narrow way given his birth and station. But now he's able to act more like a person. And his skill as an actor is really coming out. Like, I'm, again, like a million complaints about his character, as you know, in the story, as his actions. But like, Fabian's killing it. He's really killing
Fabian
it.
Fabian is great. And like, Kristen Cole is my number one enemy, but Fabian has been amazing. And I am interested to see like PTSD Kristen Cole.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Kristen Cole, as we saw with our own eyes, and everyone who worked on the show sort of described it, like, woke up in a new world entirely after Rook's Rest. So what does that do to someone like a personality like Kristen Cole's is I'm something I'm really invested in. And this idea that like we have given the war to the dragons is such an interesting line, especially if it is, as you say, the editing is always tricky, but if it is something that he says to Allison, if you think about Allison is a character who has never really understood the importance of the dragons. The line we love to talk about a lot is the one she had to Aemon in season one before he claimed Vhagar. And she was like, your obsession with those beasts like goes beyond any comprehension. She does not get why the dragons are so... She's a Hightower. She's not a Targaryen. She doesn't get it. And so this just like really underlines like Allison... You're playing a game that you don't understand. Otto did understand, right? Otto would say stuff like, when Aemon lost his eye, he's like, you know, the thing that boy has won with us today with Vhagar, like Otto understands. Alicent never did. And like Kristen now gets it because he saw a guy turn to like cigarette ash in front of him. So,
yeah, it really changed him. It was a good choice. I did not see that coming, that he would be have this extra depth to him. I like that. It was a great choice.
Interesting.
Oh, can we bring up the thing I couldn't bring up all week, which was that foreshadowing in that Kristen scene?
Which one do you mean? I forget.
Kristen seeing all those bodies and corpses and thinking they're real people a lot, like you know.
Oh yeah,
it's
that's
the
right.
Inverse of what's gonna happen to him, right?
The butcher's ball. Remember when he's gonna find corpses that he thinks they're not people, and then they're gonna turn out to be really alive. So it is kind of an inverse. He thinks this person is alive, and they're ash, but it's gonna be really alive.
I've been keeping that in all week, and I was like, wait, this is my chance to say it. Okay,
brilliant.
That's a good. Yeah, I think that is foreshadowing. Yeah, that's a very good call. Shout out to Gwaine Hightower. We just like this character. He's an excellent choice, including him in Cole's campaign.
Since before the season.
Yeah, we love Freddie Fox.
I know, we're all the great heads.
We are the great heads, yes. He's Freddie the Great, Gwaine the Great.
Do you guys watch Slow Horses?
I've not seen Slow Horses.
No, we should watch it.
In all your free time, when this season wraps up, watch Slow Horses. Freddie Fox is so good in that show. You'd really like it.
Anyone else who's seen the show, weigh in. Let us know what you think, too.
I'm sold.
So, yeah, he's great. Having someone to talk to on campaign was just a great narrative choice because he's asking all the questions that Kristen Cole isn't explaining. He's like, I've got my trap. And this was your trap? Isn't Harrenhal that way? Is, you know, like all the things. Like, it's like, oh, yeah. And he's also comic relief, but he's not like incompetent. He starts off as kind of like, oh, I just want to party. I want to be comfortable on campaign. It doesn't seem like he's still that same guy by the end of it. Like, it changed him, too, you know? And I respect
Hightower.
That.
Yeah, Gwaine Hightower has seen some shit. Definitely.
But in the book, this guy dies when King's Landing is taken. So I don't know that we should expect him to live much longer, though.
Although we had our theory that
we do have a theory, yes.
Yeah, you brought up that it could be Otto that's rolled into the Greens poisoning plot. And I brought up the counterpoint that perhaps Gwaine could also play or instead play that role. I feel either Hightower. My point is, we don't think we're getting a second Aubert. We're getting Otto or Gwaine in that role.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. I think Otto's more likely. What do you think? Do you think they could substitute someone else for Hobert for the Ulf the White poison scene?
100%. I hope it's Gwaine. Like, it's too late for them to pivot because they've already shot the whole show. But like, I think Gwaine has been a real hit with audiences. And I think if they see what Freddie Fox can do, they would be like, let's keep this guy around. Let's like find a reason to keep him around.
Yes.
I'd love to keep him. But actually, that brings in a larger question for me, for you guys. Do you find yourselves having any difficulty emotionally investing in characters in the show, knowing that almost all of them are going to die? Like, let's bring up a Jace, for example. Like, is it harder for you to get emotionally invested in Jace? They're doing such a good job, I think, making Jace versus like Luke, who we didn't have time to get to know, or with love and respect, Jaehaerys, who we definitely didn't get time to know, or the Cargills, who we barely knew. Rhaenys, we knew. They did such a good job setting up Rook's Rest, and I think they're doing a really good job setting up Jace as someone like, we're going to be sad to leave us at the Gullet whenever that happens. But I think I find myself holding back a little because I'm like, oh, I know I only have a little bit more time left with you. Is that happening to you guys at all?
A little bit, but I mean, we kind of went through it with Game of Thrones too. Like, we knew a lot of these characters were going to die. So we kind of have experience with this. And it's like, I try to, it doesn't always work, but I try to be like, let's enjoy the time we get. I try to take a positive outlook on it. Like, yeah, we're not going to get a lot. And when we have extra scenes with a character like Jace, I try to like feel good about that rather than, oh God, this is just. It's dwindling. It's a wick. It's a candle that's almost burned out. You know, I try or an hourglass with very few grains of sand left. But yeah, I mean, that's just the nature of all these stories, right? These George R. R. Martin stories, like people are going to die. So
I think, I mean, totally. I think I just with Thrones, we had so many seasons where we didn't know what was going to happen. So I sort of like got out of practice with that. But I mean, you're right. I knew Catelyn and Rob were going to die and I was emotionally invested in them anyway. So that's a good point. I'm having a little bit of, I think because so many people die in such rapid succession very soon that I'm having a little bit of problem.
Yeah, I think they've done a good job at pushing Jace's death so that they give us more time with him. Yeah, and giving us scenes with him so that I do actually care about him. So yeah, I'd say I think I wouldn't care about Jace much at all. But I'm actually like really dreading his death. So I think it's working despite me knowing what's happening in that respect. And I think that's true for there's tons of character deaths still to come that I know they're coming and I'm still like really, really dreading. And some of them I'm attached to the character and some of them I'm attached to the actor and some of them I'm not attached to either. I'm just sad for what the reaction is going to be. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really care about Lil Joffrey that much, frankly, but I care about how it's going to impact Rhaenyra, you know?
Especially given how incredible Emma has been at showing their grief. Like, they're so good at grief. And like, are we going to have to do that again? Oh, like, oh no. they're going to sink us with their amazing acting. I'm like, no. Yeah. Yikes.
Let's all just get emotionally invested in Alice Rivers, who lives forever. And then we don't have to worry about it.
She is a safer emotional investment. That's true. Rhaenyra says, speaking of, let's pivot to Dragonstone. Or actually, right before Dragonstone, we see a shot of King's Landing streets in the darkness, and we see Elinda Massey, her handmaiden, who is doing her braids and stuff, and was the one in the room when Eric and Arik did their thing. So she's been sent to King's Landing. We thought this was a blood and cheese thing when we first saw this before the season. It's like, oh, Elinda's going to King's Landing. That could be a blood and cheese connection. But no. So we were like, well, what is that? And now we see... Well, we still don't know what it's about, but it seems to be related to Mazaria's voiceover saying there's more than one way to fight a war, which is another line that we've been hearing since before the season.
I have a question real quick.
Yeah.
Do y'all think that did Elinda go with Rhaenyra to King's Landing in the past on all her trips? Like, do you think Elinda went because she had traveled to King's Landing with Rhaenyra in the past?
Probably. I mean, she's her handmaid. She probably goes with her almost everywhere she goes. Yeah.
Another question I had is like, we've seen Mazaria and Elinda ever since we saw Elinda in King's Landing in one of the trailers. Mallory and I have been like, what is Elinda doing in King's Landing? It's been driving us bonkers. And, you know, there's that moment a couple episodes ago where Elinda and Mazaria were like whispering with each other before Rhaenyra comes in. So question that I had was like, do you think Elinda has always been an agent for Mazaria? Because we know like Talia, Mazaria had agents in the castle, and we know that Larys, I want to say him the way that you say it, Larys like killed, I don't usually, but I will respect.
He says it both ways, Joanna. He goes back and forth. The other day he called him Larry on accident.
Yeah, I didn't say Larry. Like Larys, like Larry. David. Larys David, yeah. Bomp, bomp, bomp.
But like, you know, we know that Larys had all the Talia-esque people killed in the castle, but Elinda was on Dragonstone. Oh, so like, was Elinda always a Mazaria agent, a plant?
Interesting.
I don't know the answer to that, but I'm like intrigued by what she's doing there. Is she there to stir up more of a riot? Is she there to recruit dragon seeds? Like, what is she doing?
Standing amidst all those gold cloaks is very curious. Like, yeah, what is she doing there? You know? And,
yeah.
And this is a different scene than the other one that I'm pointing to, the one that Ashea said. I was pointing to one where she's in darkness and rain. So this is two completely different scenes here. We've got a daylight with gold cloaks and then this darkness and yeah. So there's multiple things happening here.
Mission Impossible King's Landing, first in with Septa Rhaenyra and now with like Little Red Riding Hood Elinda. Like, I'm here for it. I'm excited.
Yeah, I like it. So one thing that's an interesting point you make about Mazaria and her, that would be curious, because Mazaria mostly seems to work with other lowborn people, and Elinda is Elinda Massey. She's the daughter of one of the council members of Gorman Massey. So that's not a huge, like, that's not like a negative association, but it might argue against it, but I like the idea a lot, and we'll have to wait and see. So Dragonstone, Rhaenyra says, the path I walk has never been trod in the trailer, and it's this incredible framed shot here where she's in front of the books, and there's the Meraxes statue head in the background, and the lighting is just, this is such a great shot. I don't know what she means by that, but I'm guessing, I mean, she would be the first queen of Westeros.
Are we all, do we all agree that that's Meraxes? Like,
yeah,
that's what we've all,
I think
because
the eye, pretty I think sure. the bolt yeah. through the eye, I think it looks like it's I like to it. Me. Yeah,
yeah.
I think, I don't know any other dragon skull that it would be in that case, right?
Yeah, I don't either. It looks a little small to be Meraxes, but with that broken eye hole, it really, especially that they were talking in front of it right before Rhaenys died, which is like Rhaenys right. and Rhaenys, Meraxes and Maelys, and breaking a wall when they die, which also happens with Meraxes.
Yeah, I think the parallels are so strong. And like, yeah. And Rhaenyra has like been reading all this Visenya stuff, and then she's looking at the stat, like the Meraxes. Like, I feel like there's all this stuff about her thinking about the first queens of Westeros, of Rhaenys and Visenya both. You know, I think it's so meaningful.
I love it. I love it.
Totally agree. Yeah, I think so. We seem to be united on that one. There's another shot of Rhaenyra looking at the painted table when it's unlit, which is kind of neat. And I wonder if she's just, I don't know, up late, still pondering her options. It's just an interesting shot. I don't really have a whole lot to read into it. What's interesting is in the trailer, we don't have a lot of direct reactions to Rook's Rest. Maybe there's this shot of Rhaenyra holding back tears is one example. And there's the shot of Corlys like standing in front of the Driftmark seat, which is very more clearly what's going on there, but there isn't a lot else said about it, so I guess they're just kind of waiting to show it to us more directly, which that's gonna
hurt. Yeah. Something I wanted to say when you mentioned Aemon in front of the throne is I think they just like never want to miss an opportunity to position someone in front of the throne, you know, like yeah. Daemon in his dreams
just looks so good. Yeah.
Aemon in real life, and then in the trailer, tons of times we've gotten Corlys in front of his throne, you know, so it's like these guys standing in front of their thrones, or ladies, you're invited to stand in front of thrones. We would love to see it.
One thing that's definitely common in the books, it's been shown in the trailers, you could see why things are heading in that direction, is the dragon seeds. We already had Ulf use the term in the show, and of course, in the books, it's the loss of Maelys that prompts the Blacks to consider alternative means of using their untapped draconic resources. They have Silverwing and Vermithor, who Daemon already visited in season one. Seasmoke is there, of course. And just in time, we have George, his blog, weighing in on things of dragon habitat and lifestyle. A lot of these comments are major fodder for theorizing.
That's wild.
Yeah. He said some fun things there, too.
Yeah.
But most of them aren't terribly surprising. I mean, him saying where they like to live is like, yeah, that's kind of always been the case. One thing that was a little funky that what he said was that they don't like to live away from volcanoes. They're not big at ranging and going other places. He does have Silverwing go live at Red Lake after the war. So he didn't say it never happened. He did say it's a special
volcano.
Circumstance.
Obviously, there's a dormant volcano underneath Red Lake.
Yeah, clearly. That's why it's red, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll come back like in another episode to get deeper into what he said, but I want to get some of your takes on George's comments here.
Do you want to spend like an hour on adding two extra legs to the dragons on the sigil?
That's so funny.
George did.
If y'all haven't read that, George himself was trying to get them to get rid of those extra legs, and he's like, not only did they not go away, but they started popping up in my books too. Like, what the hell?
He's brought it up so many times. Can you imagine if you were that, whoever that production designer person was who added those two extra legs, and you're like, oh no,
yeah.
I've forever diminished the quality of life for George R. R. Martin by that decision.
Yeah, I wonder who was the person who beget it? Who was the first person in the Game of Thrones production who did this?
Yeah, where did the first examples of the fourth leg come from?
He said in his post, I think it was on the sail, when Daenerys comes across the Narrow Sea.
Yeah, so who designed
Westeros?
Those sails? You got to go back and ask the
VFX.
The
VFX department, isn't it?
I guess
And they often, sometimes they outsource some of the VFX. Yeah. Like, they might be like, actually a different team did the sails.
Yeah. A random like VFX house just was like, dragon should have four legs. All right, I don't know.
One comment George made that to some people might have been surprising, but wasn't really surprising to us, is that he said, if dragons were more widely ranged, more houses would have them. It's like, oh, wow, you don't need Valyrian blood, Targaryen blood to bond with her. We've always known that. We've always known that. Like, it's the first Valyrians didn't have that leg up. And we have in Fire and Blood multiple examples of characters who do not have dragon blood trying to ride a dragon. And they act like it's completely possible. No one's like, oh, are you sure this will work? And I'm not even talking about like Adam and Alan of Hall. I'm not talking about Nettles. I'm talking about guys like Stefan Darklyn tries to mount a dragon. Like, that guy does not have Targaryen blood. And he's like, I'm going to try it.
But it doesn't go well for him.
It does not go well for him. And when
here's my question for you. Is it theoretically possible that someone like Stefan Darklyn has some sort of Valyrian heritage far back? Like, is it
possible? It is possible, yes.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
That's what I would say.
It's possible.
Say.
They're a house in Blackwater Bay. Maybe they married one of the Targaryen princesses. during the age prior to Aegon the Conqueror. It's 100 years of Targaryen history there. It's not very well explored.
I would counsel that it's theoretically possible, since we don't know what was going through Stefan Darklyn's head. It's possible that he's like, I've got a drop of dragon blood. I'm going to try.
It's an old theory that the Darklyns had a Targaryen princess marry into their house. It's like predates House of the Dragon. It predates even the Dance of the Dragons, like, the book. Because the Darklyns are so staunchly loyal to the Targaryens, they had 7 Kingsguard in their span. And that's like, wow, that's outstanding. So maybe that was often seen as maybe the implication of a greater connection. But it's not confirmed.
Is it like midichlorian count in Star Wars? Like,
back to Star Wars, yes. Your D count instead of your M count.
Yeah. Like, how many drops of dragon rider blood do you have in you? Yeah. Do you have to have the nettles question? I mean, like, because Adam and Alan, that is, of course, people are just like in a frenzy over that, because they're like, well, if they're not Laenor's kids and they're Corlys's kids, does that mean they have no like dragon blood in them? And then how far up Corlys's family tree do we have to go to get a Targaryen who married in there somewhere or something like that? But like, I think the Nettles question is even more on people's minds, because Nettles really seemed like someone, like, to go back to Star Wars, like, when we thought Rey was nobody from nowhere, or Broom Boy, or whoever, like, democratization of the forest, democratization of dragon riders. If you take your time and have enough sheep, you too can ride a dragon, sort of thing. And then if the theory that's going around that Nettles is going to be replaced by Rhaena, then that takes that sort of like democratization of dragon riding off the board to a certain degree. I don't know. It's a fascinating.
To a certain degree, unless we believe that some of the dragon seeds are not really dragon seeds, you know?
You don't believe Ulf. You don't believe anything Ulf says.
Yeah, I think
saying?
Ulf might not be legit one. And do we know how much do Adam and Alan have? Like, how much do you count that, you know?
Yeah.
But I think
right.
Ulf is the point. And again, if you look at the people who try, at the very least, whether they succeed.
Yeah, we got Brown Ben Plum with just a drop of dragon, you know, and things like that. So this has been a long time coming. These interactions and this mystery. And also on this blog, George said some of the stuff would be cleared up in the Winds of Winter or Dream of Spring. So we do have answers coming, though. Who knows how long they will.
That's
be
so optimistic of you. I support it. Are you guys where are you guys on the Winds of Winter is coming? That announcement is coming. Conspiracy theory
I think the announcement's coming. I don't think it's coming at Worldcon or at any particular event or anything like that. I think, like, yeah, it's gonna, I think it's in the next year type beat, but yeah. I don't think he's ever been like, I'm going to announce it at some event. Like, that's not his style.
Yeah, he's been traveling for a while, so if he's had it done, he's had it done for a while. That means he's waiting like 2 months to announce it at a con, which seems kind of unlikely, you know. Also, he's not an official guest of the con, so like, what official capacity would he even be able to? You'd think he would do it when he was an official. I don't know. I'm still in the I have no expectations mode. I've been locked into that for a while just to protect my own sanity.
I put this Ashaya, game in shot. You. This is my mood. Yeah.
I was going to say, thank you for bringing up boy band Daemon Targaryen for us. I love this.
We'll have a lot to say about Daemon in the second half of this episode. Two more quick questions. Do you have a take on Nettles, Rhaena, and Sheepstealer? Like, the rumor is that Rhaena is going to ride Sheepstealer.
Yeah. For the Nettles fans out there, my colleague David Jacoby is calling himself Nettle Chips is what he's calling the Nettles fans. I do not want to bum you out and say I don't think Nettles is coming, but I do think that the shot that Ashaya just put up of Rhaena in the Vale looking, I showed this to one of my other co-hosts, Dave Gonzalez, who you guys know, Dave.
Yeah, we did.
I showed him this photo. I was like, doesn't it look like she's looking at a dragon? He's like, Jordan, she could be looking for anything in that photo. I was like, I guess.
She's looking eerie.
It could be
I don't
a beautiful
know.
Sunset. Yeah.
She's looking slightly up and she looks stunned. And he's like, it could be anything. I was like, fair. Okay, fine.
Anything, yeah.
But I think that I don't know if you guys saw that Reddit post that was floating around of this idea of tying Rhaena, claiming Sheepstealer, abandoning her post as babysitter, and when the kids got the way they do in the Gullet, Rhaenyra blaming Rhaena, and
oh,
so that resentment of Nettles that happens in the book out of like jealousy from her closeness to Daemon is instead a resentment of Rhaena for not
dereliction of duty
the kids. Yeah, exactly. And I was like, that was the most convinced I had ever been about the Reyna Nettles.
That's a reasonable idea. You know, yeah.
I was like, that's interesting. Because they really emphasize that in their, like, that conversation that they had. And the dragon eggs get lost, right? The kids, it's in that's disarray. True. And the dragon eggs that were put into her, you know, carefully guard these, get lost. And I guess wind up with Daenerys. If you
did you see
that.
There was pushback on that? Kondal was like, not so fast.
Good. Okay.
Oh, I didn't see he said
that.
He
pushed back against Geeta for saying that. He's like, not so fast, okay. Y'all.
With so much respect to Geeta, who has done an incredible job, I have learned over the years to not take the things that directors of episodes say, because they're not always like privy to everything that happens sort of behind the scenes. So like when they dig in on, like, yes, they are perfectly qualified to talk about the things that they did in their own episode. When they get into lore sometimes, I mean, Alan Taylor was certainly guilty of this on Thrones, like, yes, that they just say things that I'm like, that's not quite, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, people already know not to listen to the actors on that, but people would think, I could see why people would listen to the directors, but you're 100% right. They are not keepers of the lore, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
So one last question before our break here. Alan, are we seeing the show do like a Varys egg on egg thing here where he's ashamed of his silver locks, so he shaves them off? I mean, Adam has black hair, so, you know, there's not an automatic thing, but I love the theory.
Oh, I love that idea.
Right?
Yeah, and then it would be cool if we see him grow it out when he, like, claims it, and then we have longer hair. You know, cool.
Oh, I love it. I would love that if they both had shaved heads. I would love that,
that would be
too.
Cool.
Yeah, wait, are you saying that Alan is a merman? Is that what you did?
Yeah, of course. Yes. He's okay, part merman, part seahorse.
But yeah,
all cool.
Yeah, like, obviously we see little egg shave his head to hide his heritage. So there's that. And as Izzy's brought up, maybe Varys.
That's a good one. Yeah. All right. So Joanna, your coverage on The Ringer, what is your schedule for everybody? Maybe already well aware of that, but just to be sure, like, tell everybody about your content and other things you do too. Cause then obviously y'all don't just cover House of the Dragon. You are a very diverse podcast. You cover so many things.
Oh, thank you. Right now, it's a lot of House of the Dragon.
Yeah, that's the focus now.
Sunday nights, we do Talk of Thrones, which drops like immediately after the episode in podcast and video form on the Ringerverse YouTube channel. On Tuesdays, Mallory and I do obscenely long deep dives into the episodes, you know, into all the lore and everything that we can possibly dig into. We do our best History of Westeros impression on that podcast. Wednesdays, I do Trial by Content with Dave and Neil, who we've all been at Con of Thrones with. And those we do like sort of what you guys do on Saturdays, like the look aheads, what's coming up, that sort of stuff. Thursdays right now, we're covering Acolyte. And then I'm also covering Presumed Innocent on our Prestige TV feed. So that's I'm up to
right now. That just makes me appreciate even more you taking time to come talk to us today, because that is a very, very busy schedule you've just described.
Yeah, but you guys are the best. Oh, you're just the best at what you do. I love you guys so much.
Well,
so,
the feeling is mutual. The feeling is mutual.
Thank you.
We hope you all out there who are in the New York area or will be in the New York area around the final episode of the season can join us at City Winery New York at 6:00. The doors will open in City Winery Manhattan on August 3rd. And we will hope to see you there to cover the predictions and review of the season for season 2, right?
That's
before
so cool.
The finale. Yeah, it's going to be fun. Huh?
I love that you guys are doing that. I did a live show in New York at City Winery last year. And it
awesome.
Was the one that they have at Grand Central. I don't know which one you guys are.
We're at the Chelsea one.
You guys are doing.
Chelsea.
The Chelsea one. Yeah. But it was such a dream. Like if anyone of you guys are like considering doing it, like it was so fun. City Winery is such a fun venue to do a live show. You guys are going to absolutely have a blast.
So question, do you have a custom wine bottle with your like logo on it? Because we're about to have that too.
I'm so jealous of you guys.
Oh, okay.
That's so cool.
So we got that. And then anyone listening, we're going to have a costume contest. So I hope if you come, you dress up as well. That's
yeah, so cool. We're going to give away shirts and other cool stuff. Maybe a bottle of that wine, maybe some coins. We've got a nice coin collection we can tap into to make some nice gifts. And maybe we'll come up with some other ideas as well. So we hope to see you all there. Once again, that is August 3rd in New York at City Winery.
You can go to bit.ly/howlivenyc to get to it, or just go to our website.
Right on. Let's take a few questions before getting back to the coverage. Whitney Lee says, this is like deja vu. Joanna, how? H-O-W. I spent so much time with you folks. Also, hey, Ashay, get out from behind the camera.
There's technical reasons I'm behind the camera.
Yeah, it's weird having three people. Like, two people is a nice split down the middle. Three people's kind of weird. Four people, it goes back to kind of cool, but odd numbers
are
weird.
It's like if you've ever played, like, Mario Kart and been, like, a three-person game in Mario Kart. You're like, it's better if we just do two-player or four-player. I'm not playing three-player. It's kind of like that.
That is a lot of it right there, yeah.
So telling me is that they need to go to the live show to see Ashaya.
Yeah!
That's a good way to do it. Good point. Callista Cross says, I can't listen live, but just dropping in to say thank you all for the content during the show season. Thanks, Callista. We'll hopefully see you at a con in the near future. And Stephanie Vale says, do you think we'll see Reyna / Lady Jane in the Vale soon, and or what do you think they're up to for the rest of the season? Yeah, the trailer shot shows Lady Jane in the next episode. So we have been seeing this exact trailer shot since before the season, just her sitting there in her nice blue dress looking at someone, probably Reyna, because that's the character we know of who's there, but it could be someone else. So, we're probably getting her very next episode, unless the trailer just straight up lied to us. But I really don't know what they're going to do the rest of the season, other than maybe this sheep stealer stuff.
Claim a dragon? Yeah.
Yeah. Your retort to Dave could have been, yeah, she could be looking at anything, but why are we having, like, you know, they're not going to have many scenes with her. Like, the scenes of Reyna, they're going to be few and far between. We're going to hope for them, but we know they're going to focus on the more central characters. You know, that's just what they do.
I would say, like, yeah, she could be looking at the eerie, but why would she look horrified? Like, why would she look like that face?
I know.
It's like, she's looking at something. It's a dragon.
What I kind of like about that, because, like, we don't know exactly how the red sewing is going to go, but I was just talking to Dave and Neil about this idea of, like, who do we know who's going to the red sewing that, like, Stefan Darklyn, Ulf, and Hugh, right? And, yeah. Like, then there's Alan and Adam. Adam already has a relationship with Sea Smoke, it seems like, just sort of like it's happening.
It's already, yeah.
But in terms of, like, Ashay, you brought up on a recent episode the fact that they've cast someone for Silver Dennis, but, like, in terms of, like, who's going to succeed versus who's going to fail, like, do we feel like we have enough, with love and respect to Stefan, like, do we feel like we have enough investment in, like, the failures, or we'll just be like, hey, I know that character, so obviously they're going to claim a dragon? But I like this idea of spreading it out, so if, like, whatever's happening with Adam and Sea Smoke seems to be, like, happening elsewhere. Like, we've got that shot in the trailer that you guys have talked about with Cyrax and Sea Smoke and what beautiful looks like Rhaenyra and probably Adam on a beach somewhere. And then if Reyna claims Sheepstealer in the Vale, then you're kind of breaking up the sewing and the claiming sort of geographically, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's true. Rather than it being all at Dragonstone like it is in the book,
right.
It's much more spread out. Even with only one breaking of George's not entirely set expectation that the dragon shouldn't go too far away, which is
right.
The Vale's not that far away. The Vale's closer to Dragonstone than Red Lake is to Tumbleton, you know.
So. They're robbing me of what I really want, which is a comedy style montage of all the failed dragon seeds. I just want to see dozens of people trying and getting torched, and I'm sick.
No, I agree with you. I floated that to Dave Gonzalez, and he does a lot of work in VFX, and he's like, Joanna, that's so expensive. he was like they're just gonna have to show us a pile of charred bodies, like, we can't. He's like when I named all the dragons, he's like, all I'm hearing is dollar signs. You just said, like, cannibal, sheep stealer, Silverwing, Vermithor. All I'm hearing is, like, ka-ching, 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 ka-ching. So
it's got to be like Battle of the Burning Mill. Like you said, they just show the bodies. Like, someone goes into a cave, you hear a scream, and then there's a roar. Like, you never see it. You're just like, oh, that's that, you know?
Yeah, real like Monty
that.
Python.
I would love that.
Come back out.
I would like that method. I really want there to be a level of humor to it.
This just gets at how sick we all are. We're like, no, don't kill the dragons, but kill all the people you want, you know? Especially by dragon, you know?
I think what this means is that no matter what happens, someone, one of your devoted History of Westeros fans, needs to make Ashaya a, like, Benny Hill soundtrack cut of the Red Sewing.
Oh my god! Someone in our chat just said, Amanda Mulano said, we need to do the montage with the Benny Hill theme in the background.
Oh my god.
So yeah, you are same brain with Amanda there.
That's amazing.
Exactly.
Okay, let's talk about the Riverlands. We've got a lot more shots to come. And basically, if we look at line all the trailer shots that we have yet to see that are damning somewhere in the Riverlands or seemingly in the Riverlands, which they may not all be, but they probably are. There's a lot, right? There's just a lot left to come. Now, we know for sure in the next episode, there's Daemon on Caraxes facing some Bracken men with an incredible shot of Daemon with this Lord Bracken walking away or turning his horse. I don't know what's going on, but Caraxes is right behind. When I first saw this, I thought it was Maelys's dead head, but then I realized, no, that is a living dragon.
Yeah. So it's a long-necked boy.
Yeah. So this is very interesting. I don't know. He says, our terms are simple. Bend the knee to me or your house burns, I guess. They submit, but there's another trailer line from way back where he says, I did not think they'd be so eager to die, but those might not be connected here, but they might be. So maybe he just roasts them. That would be wild. I don't
I just want to shout out Matt Smith's delivery of, oh, your house burns. Yeah. Like, the way he says it is so funny to me. And also, I want to ask you guys if you, oh, it's right there. Shit. Yeah, if you, this sigil on, like, the sigil here.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Slightly different from the sigil we saw before at Burning Mill. So I'm wondering, do you think they have, like, away jerseys that they wear or something like that? Like, is this a slightly special?
That's the away
jersey
version. That's fantastic. Yeah, we got home, we got away jersey. Yeah, the Bracken's away jersey has a stag on it for some reason. I don't know why. I mean, it also has the horse, but yeah, why is there a stag there? I don't get it. You got to zoom in real close. There's a second animal there. It's, you can't see it from that angle. It's not visible in that shot. I paused it in a different spot when I was watching the trailer. So, but continuing on the exploration of these possibilities in the book, there's a battle of Stonehenge, which is, you know, that's the battle that where the Brackens fall. But it isn't really a battle in the book. It's really just right after the Battle of the Burning Mill, all these houses that supported the Blacks show up with Caraxes, and the Brackens are like, we've already lost most of our army, and now there's seven Riverlands houses and a dragon here. Okay, we give up. So if we're guessing it'll go a somewhat end up in a similar place with the Brackens defeated and bending the knee to the Blacks, then that all fits, but they might take a different route to get there.
I love what a good job they're doing of showing the like chaos in the Riverlands and just like the complete, like the fact that the Tullys are so weak right now means that the already sort of divisive, contentious Riverlords are just absolute chaos for Daemon. Yeah. And I love that because, like, you know, in the simplified show version, Jace just has to like talk to Cregan Stark, talk to Jane Eyre, and he's like, I got the North, I got the Vale, no prop. Like, that's all. He's just like, bam, bam. And with the Riverlords, it's just a completely different proposition.
You know, just a side note, George loves his Muppet Tullys, but let's not forget that he also threw in the Riverlands, in the same era, in the same war, there is a Peter Piper from House Piper. So.
Amazing. I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Daemon getting on Dragonback, given that he seems like to be constantly tripping balls?
I'm having so much fun with Daemon on drugs. It's just like all the jokes are coming out like, this is Daemon. This is bat, like Fear and Loathing in Harrenhal. I mean, it's literally bat country. You may have heard me make that joke. Good. I'm going to keep making that joke because I think it's pretty good.
It made me laugh.
So it's no good to drink and fly, but you can do drugs and fly.
Yeah,
no problem.
Aegon showed you can't drink and drug, but drugs, yeah.
Just, if it were me, I would not conduct Dragonback warfare if I'm just constantly, A, getting no sleep, and B, tripping balls constantly. So
yeah, he's already an ornery guy. Helping his So there's this non-book scene that we're seeing with Jace and the twins, which looks awesome. It's yet again, we get an overhead shot, which they're showing a lot of, they like this overhead shot. Like there's the one in Harrenhal where we are looking down on the table and some other ones at Dragonstone. It's very cool. I like, it's a shot that I like to see. But so this isn't a book scene, but it's very related to book plots because the Freys definitely get involved in the war. Sabatha Frey and Forrest Frey take Harrenhal. Oh, well, actually, Forrest dies at the fish feed, and then Sabatha takes Harrenhal. But apparently this is not Sabatha Frey. This is Serena Frey, which sort of makes sense because this woman looks older than Sabatha should be. So we're hoping there's a Sabatha elsewhere, which is entirely possible.
But this doesn't exactly look like what we think of when we think of Forest Gray either, right?
No, like, he's supposed to be like a badass in this guy.
Yeah. They're both supposed to be these like martial fighters, and we get these like soft little lords and ladies. But like, listen, it takes all kinds to
maybe he's tougher than he looks.
Yeah,
so I guess that's my question. Do you think they would give these two characters any of the plot we see in the book, Joanna? Or do you think we're getting another character? Do you think we're getting her later? Or do you think some of that's given to them?
I think because I adore you, Ashaya, I'm going to say we're going to get Sabbatha Frey in all of her queer fighting.
She'll be wearing blue and purple and... Yeah. Carrying a rainbow banner.
Don't let Ashaya down. I know people work on the show listen to this podcast. Don't let Ashaya down. She deserves it.
So we saw Vermax in the corner, like from a distance seeing this shot. So that's cool. I always like seeing more of Vermax. Now, if you were to refresh people's memory on what Sabbatha does, she takes Harrenhal and she's there when Vhagar comes and torches all the woodworks, which apparently are being rebuilt, and they're just going to all go up in flames again. And this is like a little bit of a callback to the show's version of the Red Wedding, where the Blackfish was just in the bathroom when everything went down. So I wonder if they're having a little bit of fun with that, because even though that's a show version, and the book version has her hiding in the privy when Vhagar. So that still the two could meet somewhere here. Yeah. I love that.
Serena looks to me like someone who might hide in the privy. And listen, I don't think it's a bad move. I think I've heard worse moves in my life than hiding in the privy when the dragon comes to call. You know?
It's Vhagar. Like, are you going to face her? I mean, no.
I guess that's my point, is that I could see Lady Serena doing that part of the Sabbatha plot.
Yes.
I can't really see Lady Serena having, like, sleeping with Black Alley, but I don't know what Black Alley... I could, like, maybe, like, a May December romance. Who knows? I don't know. Like, I'm not against older lesbians. Like, that's cool. I just don't... I don't see her as a fighter. That's the main thing. I don't see her as a fighter, but I could see her hiding in Harrenhal.
So if she wants to hide in the priv, but then later, like, her daughter gets to do the, like, the fighting and the Black Alleying that Ashaya deserves, nay, demands, then hopefully for season 3 you get that. I hope so.
I like that nickname you just gave it, the priv. Yeah. Shorthand.
Man, that's my anglophilia coming through. I apologize.
I love it. No, I'm going to say that from now on. Hang on, y'all. I need a trip to the priv. Give me a minute. Yeah, it's like a thing. It's an old movie trope, like, right? Pulp Fiction stuff. Just bad stuff happens to Vincent Vega when he's in the bathroom. Like, yeah, bad stuff happens when you're in the priv, yo. Yeah. So Jace being involved in diplomacy makes sense. We've already seen him do a good job of it, right? He did a good job with Craig, and that was a great conversation. He said the right things. Like, he had the words. He knew he had good retorts, good comebacks. Like, he wasn't overwhelmed. Like, he it was a good role for him. He's good at this.
Can I tell you what I've learned recently on TikTok? Is that Jace is very popular, and he's very popular for like a kind of a 4chan-y incel-y thing, which is mocking, which is the thing he does where he makes his jaw long. And like,
I was just gonna say he's like duck facing.
Yeah,
this
like there's
right
like I keep seeing like compilation. Like, I had them sent to me and I've seen them now, but like he definitely does this thing. Like, it's kind of like when they compare it to like to mewing or like, but it's a thing called mocking, I guess. Anyways, but it makes their jaw look all big. And he does it all the time. And there's like all these fan vid edits of him like serving face, and it's him making the, anyways, I'm very tickled by Jace.
I completely agree. He's blue stealing right here.
Yes,
right? Like,
yes.
That is what he's doing. Yeah. He's giving such Instagram face. And you know, Harry Collette, you do you. I think he's really feeling his hair, and I love it for him. And
me too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So maybe what we're seeing here, though, is a parallel or a mirror image of Jace's approach, assuming it's at all like his approach with Kragan, which was diplomatic, you know, like, well, let's help each other, you know, but also I'm a little above you, you know, by reminding us, let's help each other, but let me remind you that I outrank you, that kind of thing. But Daemon is just telling people what to do and expecting everyone to fall in line, which is, I don't know if that's going to work or not. Maybe both these methods will work, but it's a contrast for sure.
So you're saying Jace is not going to tell them to go put a feather pillow over Tully's face?
Well, I don't know. Maybe he will, but I don't guess so. I would guess not. I would guess he gives he offers them something for their loyalty rather than demands it, which is usually what you do. Like, Daemon's doing the thing that's a little unusual.
Well, and this is, I mean, to go back to this idea of, like, we're going to lose Jace, you know,
eventually,
sometime soonish. Like, this idea that it's going to, the way in which they're connecting him, like, it's going to be a loss for Bela. It's going to be a, you know, a huge loss for Rhaenyra personally, but then also, like, for Team Black, they're losing their strongest diplomat, right?
Yeah,
like,
good point.
It's just, like, a real blow for their team in terms of, like, their political machine. Like, Daemon's got the threatening down. Rhaenyra, the Black Council's an absolute shit show, like, absolute mess. But Jace is out here, like, winning friends and influencing people, and that's going to be a real blow for them to lose that.
They could be doing the good cop, bad cop. But you know, they're not. I mean, they are, just not in the, if they were doing it together, it might work, but separate.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. The twist here, though, is whatever Jace does, whatever, however he approaches this and whatever his future holds in terms of differences from the books, this one, his knowledge of the Song of Ice and Fire prophecy is a big difference. And that affects his motivation. Whatever he does from now on, however short or long time he has, it's part of his motivation, which is A, something Daemon barely knows about and doesn't like. And so it's yet another contrast between these two characters. And again, like you said, Joanna, that's another thing they're going to have to deal with when he dies. Rhaenyra's like, well, now who do I pass this on to? I got to have the chat with Joffrey, this 5-year-old. I don't think that's going to happen. And what's she going to do?
Rhaenyra tell a child about the Song of Ice.
This is very serious. So you can't even understand it, you know?
I would love that scene too. I would love that.
He's just trying to get through to Joffrey. He's like, he has no idea. She's like, "Mommy, who's Aegon? You know, which Aegon? I mean, my brother? Like, who are you talking about?
What's a dagger? Oh, okay, listen.
What's a prophecy?
What is unite? What is the realm? Okay. I just want to say that whenever I can't see Ashaea on camera, I always imagine she's wearing exactly this Rhaenyra velvet robe fit.
Nice.
This is your podcast.
It's nice.
Fit, right?
Yeah, yes, I love it.
Gorgeous. It's beautiful. And I hope that is available to you, Ashaea.
I won't spoil the fantasy.
Okay. So, in general, this whole stuff with Jace and his knowledge of the prophecy, well, the knowledge of the prophecy perhaps isn't directly related to the Riverlands, though it has an indirect impact on maybe how he approaches it. In general, the Riverlands plot's being expanded a lot, which makes sense. I mean, the books don't have a lot here. It actually goes a lot simpler. Let's have a book quote, actually, just to show how differently it goes. It's so much easier for Daemon in the book. Check this out. Quote.
When Prince Daemon sent forth call to arms, they rose up all along the rivers, knights and men-at-arms and humble peasants who yet remembered the realm's delight, so beloved of her father, and the way she smiled and charmed them as she made her progress through the Riverlands in her youth. Hundreds and then thousands buckled on their sword belts and donned their mail, or grabbed a pitchfork or a hoe and a crude wooden shield, and began to make their way to Harrenhal to fight for Viserys's little girl. The lords of the Trident, having more to lose, were not so quick to move, but soon enough, they too began to throw their lots in with their queen.
So basically the idea is Daemon puts out the call, everybody's like, yay, Rhaenyra, we remember her, let's go. But I don't recall even the phrase the realm's delight ever being said on the show, did it? Maybe once?
They definitely used it.
Okay.
Once, but Rhaenyra never was that.
Yeah,
the Rhaenyra that we met, who, like, speaking of diplomats, Rhaenyra on her anti-diplomacy tour of Westeros being like, you're old, you're dumb, I won't marry you, you smell bad,
need
it, can the Baratheons even read, I'm not sure, like, all of that, like, and that, like, screwed her as much as anything else. And so, like, she's never been a delight. To anyone except for, to us at home, obviously, and to like Harwin Strong when she walks through the camp with, like, smeared in blood. But like everyone else is like, what the hell is this chick up to? Like they've never portrayed her that way, which I kind of like, because, you know, there's a whole aspect in the book of like they liked Rhaenyra when she was young and hot, but then she had a bunch of kids and like wasn't as thin as she was anymore and wasn't as young, and they're like, I don't know. And so I kind of like this idea of like they were never really sold on Rhaenyra. Yeah, personally,
they just thought she was cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
That's harsh, but not unrealistic, if we're being honest there. Yeah.
Very
so.
True.
And what, if you can read here, you can maybe read between the lines and see what might happen. If Daemon is being a tyrant or something like that, just or over authoritative or whatever term you use for how he's treating the Riverlords, which I think all those fit at this point, and we'll see if that continues. If what happens in the books here is that he goes directly to the people, and through popular acclaim, they begin to follow, and that forces the lords to kind of join in. They're like, well, like everyone's joining. It's almost like the Blackfyre rebellions, where the commoners were more on Daemon's side, and that forced a lot of other people to sort of, well, we have to take a side. We have to choose. All must choose scenario.
He's just a regular axeman. He's one of the people. Look at him right here. He's down to
grab
earth.
Grab your hose. Grab your hose and come fight with me in this battle, guys.
This is him. This is a picture of him challenging the Harrenhal Hearttree to a duel. Him with his axe. He's like, you keep dreaming. You keep sending me these dreams. I'm going to chop you down. But he's dreaming right now, so he's going to chop down like a, yeah, he's going to wake up and he's chopping down a lake. He's like, oh, I can't do that. That doesn't work. Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't know what he's fighting. He's on drugs. So that might be how it goes. Maybe Daemon changes tactics and this is how he gets the lords on his side, because just by the commoners being the wave that they have to follow. But
do you think he gets people on his side by being like, come on over, we're doing DIY this weekend. I've got some home improvement projects. I've got some IKEA furniture I need assembling. I'm
jobs for all.
Jobs for all. Yeah. Yeah, he's creating jobs. That's right. Daemon the job creator. Who knew that he would be such a populist? Yeah. So this is a great shot. Harrenhal, a wide shot of Harrenhal with wooden structures going up. Wooden structures. It's like, okay, so I mentioned Fear and Loathing in Harrenhal. Now we have Field of Harrenhal. It's a dreams. I mean, it's already a dreamy place, right? So if you build it, they will come, right? Maybe that's the vibe here, right?
I have a question for you, because that inspired my... I love Field of Dreams, by the way, and I cry every time I watch it. And so, like, what is the... Are you with me that you will riot if we don't see a Viserys dream before we leave this era of Daemon and Harrenhal?
Like, I really
Patty
want
is
that.
Not... Here, what are we doing?
Yeah,
what
I really want that. Doing here? I thought it was him when it was Aemond, until you see him, his arms like,
yeah, the gate.
He was like, oh, that's Aemond. Yeah, I was like, wait, is that Viserys? Yeah. Like, oh, no, that's Aemond. Yeah. But yeah, I will be a little upset if we don't get Viserys. I hope, come give us some Patty. We want some Patty, just a moment.
My question is that, like, I obviously it would be Daemon's, you know. Dream. It would be Daemon's visions that would make the most sense to see Viserys in. But I was having fun thinking about who Aemond could see if he saw things, who he would see, and obviously he'd see Luke, I think, and that's where we get him back, right? If that were to happen, but it made me wonder. Like, I can't help but I think it would be really interesting to see Aemond with Viserys, with his father. Like, we never got these scenes of his sons with him. And so, like, as much as, it would be more meaningful in a lot of ways for it to be Daemon and Viserys, I don't think, like, if Daemon's gone from Harrenhal and we still haven't seen Viserys, I would still be rooting for him in, like, an Aemond vision. But I don't know that I think Aemond will see visions.
Okay. I agree. But because he's, like, Alice can be like, well, I already got him. I got him the quick way.
I got one of them.
Yeah, I got him. But, like, I love these dream sequences so much.
Me too.
Here would be my dream roster for Aemon visions in Harrenhal. You get Leo back to play young Aemon. I think would be really
fun. Please, he was so good.
To get Ty Tennant back to play younger Aegon, because I thought Ty Tennant
was really good too.
Ty Tennant is my dream casting for Darren, actually, because I thought Ty Tennant was so good and I was so
that would be amazing.
Pull a Dean Charles Chapman and just, like, recast him, and I'll promise I won't say a word. Bring in Tonglin Carney without the burns on him, right? Like, just have him haunt his unburned brother. And that might be it.
Okay.
We haven't seen him interact with, I mean, unless he wants to have a sex dream about Helena and please all the Helaman shippers.
That would be good. You know. That would be a good way to, like, you know, satisfy Helaman shippers, like, which I'm probably not one of them. No, not at all.
I support you, Ashaya, but
I'm not really in that. Like, I'm not like, oh, what a romance for the ages. But I am like, oh, what drama, what story, what, like,
totally.
It's good. It's an interesting story to me, to be clear. I'm never much of a shipper in that respect, in that I'm like, ooh, I love them. Oh, true love. That's not me.
But you're like, what's juicy and dramatic and will upset people? I want to see it. Preferably set to Benny Hill music.
So as I mentioned earlier, unfortunately, we must ship all that wooden construction with Vhagar later, and it's all going to be burned, most likely. Maybe with Sabbath Frey hiding in the privy. And throughout this trailer, we get, or maybe even at that moment where we're seeing that scene of the construction going, we hear, Daemon, you were made to wear a crown. And we don't know who this voice is. It's not Alice. It's not Millie Alcock.
I thought it sounded a lot like Emma, like Shin Brook.
Oh, Emma Aaron.
Emma Aaron. I thought, like listening to the trailer, that's what I thought. I don't know if anyone else was like, thought had a feeling of who it sounded like. They call it Mysterious Voice.
Yeah. Well, that'd be interesting if it was Emma. I mean...
Well, because we had that one shot in the trailer before the season where it looked like where it's Daemon's hand on a silver-haired woman's neck. And I thought it looked like Emma, but I also thought it looked kind of like Copper Penny. You know what I mean? Like that sex worker. You know, like it looked like a silver-haired woman. It didn't really look like definitively like any one person to me.
Yeah, generic Targaryen, who knows?
I was that's my favorite Targaryen, generic Targaryen.
Generis.
Generis, exactly. I was going back and forth. Emma being like the really popular theory for that, and I could see it. Or also a theory that I had, it doesn't really look like it, but I was like, if this is like a sex dream, is there a version of the story in which like Alice is having dreaming he's having sex with someone, but actually he's having sex with Alice.
Even in this shot, it kind of almost looks like it could be Gail Rankin with silver hair. I mean, it's just kind of
a blonde wig.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I guess it could be.
If we had like a Rhaenyra sex dream that turned into Alice in a blonde wig or something like that. And I will admit that like part of that theory is fueled by like behind that photo that Olivia Cooke posted of her and Gail Rankin. Gail Rankin has like bleach blonde hair. Being said, that could easily just be them getting ready for an event or something like that. But she's got blonde hair. What's going on?
So they're with that voiceover and maybe related to this dream. These might be two separate things. They're definitely pushing the Daemon making his own claim angle, but it's not 100% clear, is it? It's not like so straightforward as that. It's like, he's not against Rhaenyra, but he's sort of like, is he? I don't know. It's still kind of vague at this point. I'm not clear on it. And since it's not a book plot, we it's harder to guess at. So, but he's certainly experiencing guilt. Obviously, like that's a recurring part of his dreams is that, yeah, he's doing these things, but he doesn't feel great about it. Great comment by Dornish Dame here says, I wonder if the loss of Jace leads Rhaenyra to writing the prophecy down because, talking to Joffrey or young Aegon or young Viserys, that doesn't, as we said, that's a little comical. Leaving the likes of Bloodraven, Aerys the First, and Rhaegar to rediscover it years later. Yeah, and Aerys the First, we do know, rediscovers it later. Not necessarily from these writings, but we're not told who he gets it from, so it could definitely be Rhaenyra or a source that writes similar things.
I really like this idea because we've been seeing so much of Rhaenyra with scrolls and books and in the, like, looking at stuff and history, and it's like the idea of her being the one to, like, write it down for Rhaenyra the historian, you know, like the writer. I know, it's kind of interesting. Like, I kind of like the idea of her documenting things.
Well, yeah, and I think, like, you know, the line about Rhaegar finding something in the scrolls, we've been wondering. My big question, I love the introduction of the prophecy. I think it's great. I think it adds, it's really fun to reread and like wonder, you know, if what happened at Summer Hall or if some of the Blackfyre stuff, or like what was motivated by the prophecy and what wasn't, like all of that is like really interesting for me to ponder. But I just don't know why they don't tell everyone. why wouldn't you just tell everyone? Though that being said, Rhaenyra has already told Jace, Daemon, and Alicent, right? All mm-hmm. have heard from Rhaenyra this season. So this idea of like passed down from one liege lord to their heir, or not liege lord, one king to their heir again and again and again, one monarch to their heir again and again. I think it's a little messier than that.
Yeah, it can't quite work that well. Like, there's already a problem with Jaehaerys getting it from how to get rid of.
Exactly.
Yeah, so.
Exactly.
One, and we also have to reckon with Baelor the Blessed's burning of like all the books, which not everything was burned, but that's part of maybe why it was harder for people like Bloodraven, Aerys, and Rhaegar to discover it later, because they all came well after Baelor. Stephanie Vale asks, who has the best wig this season? Ooh, that's a tough one. I don't know. I'm not a wig expert.
Can I say shout out to the person who don't need no wig, and it's Allison Hightower, Olivia Cooke, who just has extensions or whatever.
Thank you for saying extensions.
Yeah.
Because that was what I mean. Like, we talk about wigs a lot on our podcast, so I wonder if Stephanie is a House of Our listeners shout out if you are, but like so many people tagged me in that whole like Olivia Cooke doesn't wear a wig, that's all her hair. I was like, it's not all her, that's definitely extensions, but her hair is gorgeous and amazing, and I'm not trying to like nag her hair or anything like that, but I'm like, guys, there's so much hair there. There's definitely,
she's got
extensions,
huge extensions in there. Yeah, absolutely. That's why I said it. I saw that same tweet. Yeah. I was like, no, like she's basically got a lot of fake hair on that.
Yeah. but the like hairline, the part, that's all her. It looks amazing. I will give it to like most improved wig. I'll say Rhaenys. May she rest in peace. Because like, do you remember in season one she had that like huge like bump it like
she
wig
did have the
where
bump.
Like
yeah
she had
the
this,
cone
like,
head
wig.
Almost yeah
yeah and like that looks sick. That looks amazing what she had this season. So I'll miss her, and I'll miss her new and improved wig. But I won't miss the season one situation. It was just like, you could smuggle a dragon in there. Look at that. Look how high that is. You could smuggle a dragon in there. So, yeah.
Yeah, you could totally put an egg in there. That's where the other dragon eggs head. Oh, yeah, that one. That was that was like the first scene we have of her other than at the
We're
Great
like,
Council.
What's happening? Yeah, exactly.
So, two small parts left. One is large, but so much is yet to come, and that's Alice Rivers. The character expanded both by necessity and because she's awesome. Let's refresh ourselves with a book quote.
All agree that she looked younger than her years, but whether this was simple happenstance or achieved through the practice of the dark arts, men continue to dispute. Whatever her powers, it would seem Daemon Targaryen was immune to them, for little is heard of this supposed sorceress whilst the prince held Harrenhal.
This is a great example of how Fire and Blood gives space for the show to do its own thing without explicitly violating this. They wouldn't know Daemon's dreams. How would this have been written down? Who would have written them down? Daemon doesn't have lengthy conversations with Mushroom, most likely not about his dreams. This is the kind of stuff he wouldn't tell anyone, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah. Daemon's definitely not admitting that he drooled into, like, a cup while talking to Blackwoods and Brackens. Like, he's not confessing to any of this. He's gonna tell the version you guys just read where he's like, I showed up, everyone fell in line, it was easy peasy, nothing weird happened, I never met a witch, I don't know what you mean. Like, 100%. So funny.
And they say little is heard of, which is kind of an admission that they just don't know. Because and I've said this before and I'll say it again, her story is deeply personal, meaning that what happens with her, her impact on the plot, is by her relationship with these important characters, which is the stuff that historians would never, ever have much idea on.
Every time you say her story is deeply personal, I think you're like about to talk about like how Alice Rivers' story like has like a great meaning to you personally. Like, it really resonates with you because you too are a 100-year-old sorceress. Like, I don't know. You're a bastard.
You bathe in blood? You bathe in blood? Keep your youthful looks?
No comment.
Okay. I heard you were many thousands weeks old. So, and you don't look it at all. So,
moving on to stuff that does not incriminate me as a practitioner of blood magic. Do you have any thoughts on where Daemon's dreams are headed? Will they culminate with some big final dream? Do you think maybe they'll continue after he leaves Harrenhal? This is the character we get the most questions about. I guess you might. Is that true for y'all too?
No. about Daemon or about Alice?
Oh, about Alice. Yes.
About Alice. Yeah, because there's just, I mean, I love witch stuff so much. I'm so happy. We've been like really drilling into like the Weirwood lore and this idea of like Harrenhal is this potential like hinge, the way they talk about the wall is a hinge in the world, a place where things are like thin and things come through. Like I love that stuff so much. So yeah, Alice and her incredible Weirwood apron. I'm so excited for anything she could possibly do in the future. And like, I have loved the dream so much. I don't know that they've been universally popular with people, but like all of our listeners really love them. And I just hope they continue to lean into, I mean, just in general, the magical aspect. I know Condal talked to you guys about this. He talked to us about it too when we interviewed him. This idea of like when we first are introduced to Game of Thrones, it's a world of Westeros in which the magic has receded. And then we like sort of slowly watch it seep back in. But here, like, magic is here. Dragons are here. We should be exploring all these other magical aspects. The fact that we could go to the Isle of Faces in a future season of House of the Dragon because someone in the book goes to the Isle of Faces, like, it's just, that is thrilling to me.
Please. So, yes, please.
Right? Please.
You're right. Please. Like, this is the Era of Dragons, which may or may not be correctly associated with why there's so much magic. But whether that theory is accurate or not, this is a time of magic. But, yes. Like, period. Yeah.
So, like, give us the, like, I mean, like, we talked about this a lot when we talked about how they shot Rook's Rest and what a good job they did in contrast to maybe the end of Game of Thrones when they, you know, other than Daenerys and Drogon, like the fact that they sort of lost that commitment to the connection between, let's say, Jon and Ghost, for example, which was just really disappointing at the end of Game of Thrones. Yeah. They just sort of forgot about that. kind of forgot. Or like, you know, their VFX budget didn't allow them to, or whatever it was. But like, I think that the connection between Rhaenys and Maelys as like Maelys is dying is just like, I will never get over it. It's such a good job of showing that like magical, who can, you know the mind of a dragon, sort of magical connection between rider and dragon. So all the magic, I mean, I just want all of it. I want every single magical aspect in the future season. I'm excited.
Hell yeah, me too. Do you, here's a little bit of a curveball here. Daemon's dreams seem to be pushing him both towards guilt, but also towards the crown. You know, it's like they're like two-sided, which what Alice has said to him so far is more like, don't do this stuff because it causes the suffering of women or whoever, this innocence.
Right.
That's what she says to him in their first conversation. First conversation, not the first thing she says to him, because that's, you will die in this place, which, fair point, and accurate as well, but we're a long way from that.
Just over there. Over
yeah,
the
just
God
over
side.
There.
Just
right
over there.
Over your there. Splashdown will be right there. And so it's almost like, is she, I don't fully accept that she's controlling what's happening to him, because some of these dreams are pushing him to be more violent, which I don't think she would want. So maybe is she hearing the dreams? Is she aware of what he's experiencing, or is she actually part of creating them? Or this is what I struggle with a little bit. It's very interesting.
I mean, if she had never handed him the Weirwood ayahuasca that she handed him, then I would say she's just observing and absorbing, but she seems active in that moment. And I agree. The question of like, what does Alice want? What's her agenda here? Is her agenda to push him in one direction for another? Or is it just to rip his mind to shreds so he's useless? Is it to evict him from the hall? Is she someone who's there to protect the Weirwoods, protect the small folk? I love the one theory that I love is the like Dune Bene Gesserit theory that like Alice is part of this like long-term breeding
to sort of not
the Maester conspiracy to destroy the dragons, which is its own interesting thing, but this idea of like pruning and guiding the branches of the Targaryen family tree to get us to the Prince of his promise. You know what I mean? This sort of like long game manipulation. I don't know what her, whatever she's doing to Daemon here, how that would influence that. But like, I don't think it's clear yet. And I really like that for us.
So by the way, the fact that you're saying this while you have a purplish blue glow on your eyes is great.
Thank you. Those are my blue light blockers on my glasses. So my
so
eyes.
Cool. You've got the spice on you. You have this. You have the evidence of spice consumption. But I like this idea a lot, and it fits in with one other thing. Real quick before you say something, Ashaya, which is that if she's guiding, if she's doing this, if this is some sort of pruning of the branches or some sort of way to set up Daemon and Aemon, like if this is a long term plan to calm them into fighting. Then those are two branches you would want to prune. Those are not good leaders for the future to hold the dynasty together and carry it forward into the next. So getting rid of both of them, it's pretty tinfoily, but it's the motivation is absolutely there. Like that is probably what she would want. Like, yeah, get rid of these two. And she knows it's going to happen. Maybe there's some stuff here.
I'm no stranger to a tinfoil crown myself. Okay, Ashaya, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, I just, you know, in terms of knowing how much Bran, for example, could see through the heart trees, how much green seers, you know, that are tapped into that network see, my question is whether Alice is in any way tapped into that network, in which case I would say she maybe, I would lean towards thinking she can see some of this and has more control. But I don't know that I think she is. I think she more is like a disciple of it. You know what I mean? Like, she isn't the brand type level green seer to me. It's not that type of thing to me, but it's like her giving, like, she gives him the drink that makes him have the visions, and she knows he's got to have visions in line with certain types of things. So she can use her, you know, sense to just guess what he'll dream about and to say pointed things. But I don't know. I don't really think she's like tied into the network and seeing what he sees. That's just my gut reaction.
What I would love is if it's forever ambiguous.
Yeah.
And forever up to us to decide just how much Alice is responsible for sending the dreams versus just, you know, sort of like pushing on bruises where she can, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a mystery. We love Alice, and this is part of why she gets us talking about some of these most deep cut theories, the supernatural stuff. Is she's so fun. Yeah, well, this won't be our last conversation about her, and it wouldn't be our last conversation about her even if we weren't getting any more, but we're definitely getting more of Alice Rivers and so many other of these plots.
We did ask, I can't remember if it was cut, we interviewed you and Mitchell on the podcast this last week, and I asked him if he did a chemistry. I like, you know, he's not talking about spoilers, but I was like, did you do a chemistry read with any of the new cast members? And he said, no, but he really wish he had. Ooh. So I was like, okay. But I was just like, tell me about Gail Rankin's audition. Like, you know, like it would make sense to me.
You're trying to back into that. That's clever.
Yeah, but it didn't work out for me.
Okay. You learn to do these clever things when you're interview a
you
lot of people.
Try,
I'm sure. Yeah.
You know,
I got to acquire some of those skills. We don't do as many interviews as you, but I could learn from you for sure.
No, you guys are so good at that. Are you kidding? I see
you
do it.
Well,
when Shay's like, tell me about queer people.
Like, just ask straight up. Like, yeah, just don't beat around the bush. Just go right to it. Yeah.
I wish sometimes that I was a little bit more outright with some of my questions. I think I hedge my questions a little because I want to make sure they get approved. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I wanted
exactly
to get them approved. So I was more vague. And then I was like, no, I should have just outright asked, like, are you keeping Craig and Stark on screen longer? Like, more? Are we, I wish I had pushed it, but then the questions might have just been rejected. So I don't know.
It's complicated. It's very complicated.
Yes,
and then they just
is.
Like outright, and then they just outright say it to another outlet, and you're like, damn it, I could have asked. Like,
I know, because he has done, you know, a pretty good number of interviews since the season started.
I know, seeing those interviews where I'm like, oh, well, I guess that outlet just said, no, we're not giving you our questions in advance, or I don't know what they did, like, or maybe they're blacklisted and they won't get an interview in the future. I don't know. I always wonder, like, how that came about, but
we're going to burn all our credibility by asking this one question he's going to get mad at. But we're going to put him on the spot. So it's worth it. No, he'll just avoid the question. That never works. All right. Thank you so much for coming on, Joanna. That is it for our show today. Why don't you remind everybody where to find you, you and The Ringer and all your great content.
Oh, yeah. My name is Joanna Robinson. I work at The Ringer. You can find me online at Joe Wrote This on all platforms. At The Ringer, I'm on the House of R podcast, on Trial by Content with David Neal, and occasionally the Prestige TV podcast. That's where you can find me.
I love that you have been working with David Neal for so long. Like, how long? It's been quite a while, right? Like, has it been a decade?
close to a decade, something like that.
That's
awesome. A long time.
Yeah, it's great.
How long have you guys been working together?
We started the pod in 2012.
Yeah. So we're on our 12th year. It's been 12 and a half years of us doing this. Yeah.
So a while.
Well, we miss seeing you guys like at an annual con.
Yeah. Eventually, we'll get back to one. We went to that Game of Thrones convention out in L.A. End of 2022, but I guess you weren't able to make that. But yeah, we're on opposite coasts. That doesn't help.
Well, we'll figure something out.
Thank you for having me. We will come back. We'll find ourselves in the same place in the not too distant future.
I keep hoping that San Diego Comic Con won't cross over with House of the Dragon season, and I'll have a reason to go for work again.
Yeah.
Or maybe you'll have a reason to come to Dragon Con one of these years.
I would love to.
That's our local con.
I would love it if you came to Dragon Con. There's a lot of good guests. There's tons of people you can interview.
And it's Labor Day weekend, so it's, you know, maybe that makes it easier. And it's after House of the Dragon season, and yeah.
I'm writing a note, guys. I'm gonna make it on my agenda. Thank you.
Cool. Okay, well, thanks to everybody for coming. Thanks for hanging out. If you were here live, we really appreciate that. If you're catching it afterwards, well, we appreciate that too. Tell your friends, enjoy episode 5 as well and the rest of the season. Thanks again to Joanna, and on behalf of Ashea, also thanks to Michael Klarfeld for the maps behind me and our wonderful friend Brand the Builder for our great intro. Until next time, you all know what to do. Valar Reedus.